Today is Monday, the 20th of October, 2025, and this is a World Socialist website. The October 18 No Kings demonstrations and the fight against Trump's dictatorship by the Socialist Equality Party, US. The second wave of No Kings demonstrations took place on Saturday, October 18, bringing millions of youth, workers, professionals and retired people into the streets to show their determination to fight the Trump administration's Operation Dictatorship and their disgust at the anti-communist smears hurled at them by top officials of this authoritarian regime. The more than 2,700 separate demonstrations in cities and towns throughout the United States were, collectively, one of the largest political demonstrations in the history of the country. Organizers estimated 7 million people participated, 2 million more than they said took part in the first round of No Kings rallies in June. Mass marches of hundreds of thousands were held in major cities, including New York, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., while hundreds, thousands, and tens of thousands more rallied in smaller cities and towns across the country. In Europe, thousands joined parallel demonstrations in London, Paris, Berlin, Madrid, Stockholm and Rome, as well as in dozens of smaller cities. The scale and breadth of participation explodes the official narrative promoted by the corporate media and the Democratic Party that Trump is an unchallengeable political colossus. The reality, revealed in the streets on October 18, is that Trump and his coterie of fascist cabinet figures face enormous and growing opposition. Participants, many with homemade signs, denounced the destruction of democratic rights, the assault on immigrants, the deployment of troops to cities, the mass firing of federal workers, and the dismantling of social programs. Protesters also opposed the genocide in Gaza, the enrichment of the oligarchy amid mass poverty, and the accelerating drive toward dictatorship and war. The vilification of the protests in advance by Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, Speaker Mike Johnson, and White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt angered but did not intimidate those who took to the streets Saturday. If anything, the hysterical denunciation of protesters as Hamas supporters, Antifa terrorists, illegal aliens and hardened criminals only increased the turnout. The sentiments animating these demonstrations are far to the left of anything expressed within the Democratic Party. Masses of people are coming into conflict not only with the fascistic Trump administration, but also with the Democrats, who represent another faction of the capitalist oligarchy. Trump gave his answer to the protests on Sunday, declaring in a pre-recorded discussion with Fox News' Maria Bartiromo, quote, "Don't forget, I can use the Insurrection Act," end quote. The invocation of the act, which top administration officials have indicated is imminent, would sanction the deployment of active duty military forces under the direction of the president. Trump directly threatened Democratic Party-controlled states and indicated that he was planning to send the National Guard into San Francisco. The day of the protest, Trump, true to his Nazi upbringing and intellectual debasement, responded with filth, literally. He shared on his social media account a video showing the aspiring Führer wearing a crown and piloting a plane, emblazoned with the words King Trump, dumping feces over protesters in Times Square. Another AI video, posted by Vance, depicted Trump being crowned and unsheathing a sword as Democratic Party politicians bowed before him. House Speaker Mike Johnson gave voice to the deepest fears of the American ruling class, telling ABC News' This Week interview program that he would, quote, "talk with you about the dangers of Marxism and socialism," end quote, every week. He added, quote, "It is a dangerous ideology, and it is anti-American. It goes against everything that we stand for," end quote. Referring to the likely election of Zoran Mamdani as mayor of New York, on a program of limited reforms that he is rapidly repudiating, Johnson warned of the, quote, "rise of Marxism in the Democratic Party," end quote. The violent denunciations of the October 18 demonstrations by Trump and the Republican fascists, accompanied by threats of violence, express the terror of the capitalist oligarchs over the growing opposition and political radicalization of the population. They see in every manifestation of protest the spectre of a socialist revolution. In their fascistic worldview, even the toothless reformist appeals of the Democratic Party, the oldest capitalist party of the American ruling class, is viewed as inciting rebellion and legitimizing socialism. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. The Democratic Party is deeply hostile to the mass opposition on display Saturday and is working rapidly to downplay its significance. It shares, to a great extent, Trump's economic and social policy aims and is opposed to any mass movement against Trump. This was expressed most clearly by the New York Times, the principal newspaper aligned with the Democratic Party, which published two perfunctory articles that appeared in small print on the front page of its website Sunday morning. The first article, which was published on page A17 of its print edition, quote, "No More Trump, Protesters Denouncing the President Unite Across the Country," end quote, avoided giving any estimate of crowd sizes and made no effort to convey the immense scope of the demonstrations. The second, quote, "Vance flexes the Marines' might as thousands protest Trump's agenda," end quote, wrote, incredibly, that, quote, "thousands of people across the country protested a president they accused of using his power like a king," end quote. By Sunday evening, even these two articles had been removed from the front page of the Times. In the lead-up to the October 18 protests, top Democrats ignored that they were even happening. Only on the eve of the demonstrations, when it became clear how large they would be, did party leaders issue tepid statements of support. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer posted photos of himself marching alongside union officials in New York City, declaring blandly, quote, "We have no dictators in America," end quote, a statement contradicted by the fact that Trump is, with Democratic Party complicity, acting as a dictator. The intervention of the Democrats is aimed entirely at defusing opposition and challenging the immense anger of millions back behind the party's own reactionary, pro-war and pro-capitalist agenda. This became even clearer the following day when leading Democrats acted as if the largest protest movement in US history had never occurred. On ABC's This Week, following Johnson, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries made no mention of the demonstrations, Trump's AI propaganda videos, or the ongoing conspiracy to establish a presidential dictatorship. Instead, he focused entirely on appeals for bipartisanship and negotiations with the Republicans to end the government shutdown. Quote, "We want to sit down, find a bipartisan path forward to enacting a spending agreement," Jeffries said, while touting the possibility of a deal with Trump over Affordable Care Act subsidies. Those who posture as the left within the Democratic Party, above all Senator Bernie Sanders, play a particularly foul role. Sanders' last-minute decision to parachute into the main rally in Washington, D.C., after previously planning to address a small event in Vermont, was a calculated intervention aimed at channeling the growing radicalization of millions back into the safe confines of the Democratic Party. Sanders' speech was demagogy in its purest form, a compendium of moral appeals and denunciations of billionaires devoid of any political content. While invoking freedom, democracy, and the danger of authoritarianism, he never once mentioned capitalism or socialism. Sanders spoke of fighting for working families, but he offered no explanation of what type of struggle he proposed, because he does not propose one. The most significant statement Sanders made was his declaration, quote, "I say to my Republican colleagues, come back from your month-long vacation, start negotiating, and do not allow the American healthcare system to be destroyed. End this shutdown," end quote. These colleagues are Trump's fascist co-conspirators. To address them as partners in negotiation under conditions where the government is preparing to invoke the Insurrection Act and deploy the military against the population is not simply naive. It is an act of political complicity. Then there is a trade union apparatus, which made no effort to mobilise its members for the demonstrations, even among those unions that formally endorsed them, though many workers attended on their own. In New York City, there was no significant organised contingent of workers, and the separate Labour rally, held nearby, was poorly attended and dominated by officials, not rank-and-file workers. The United Auto Workers, UAW, did not endorse a demonstration or mobilise its members in Detroit, the historic centre of the American auto industry. The UAW apparatus under Sean Fain has openly aligned itself with the Trump administration's program of economic nationalism and trade war. The No Kings demonstrations represent a significant political turning point. Since the last demonstrations in June, Trump's conspiracy to erect a dictatorship has accelerated, generating enormous opposition throughout the country. Hostility to Trump is rapidly extending to his collaborators in the Democratic Party. As NBC noted in a report from the Washington demonstration, quoting a construction worker as saying, quote, "I don't have a lot of faith in the Democratic Party right now," end quote. Another worker commented, quote, "By and large, the Democratic Party is also bought by corporate interests, and they fail to stand up for the average working people," end quote. It is quite unusual for the corporate media to report on such sentiments. Even more extraordinary was a report in the US edition of the British newspaper, The Guardian, which noted, quote, "Leftist groups have called for the enunciation of a clear political program and concrete demands." In an October 15 statement, No Kings, No Nazi Führers, Mobilize the Working Class Against Trump's Dictatorship, the Socialist Equality Party said the central slogan, No Kings, articulates vast popular hostility to the autocracy, but warned that anger and outrage are not enough to stop dictatorship. End quote. It is an objective fact that the Socialist Equality Party was the only organization to place a clear political program and concrete demands before this mass audience. SEP members and supporters, as well as members of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality, distributed tens of thousands of leaflets at dozens of locations across the United States. These leaflets, reprinting the statement cited above by The Guardian, received a warm welcome from marchers coast to coast. Hundreds of copies of a new pamphlet containing recent statements of the SEP under the title Trump's Fascist Conspiracy and How to Fight It, A Socialist Strategy, were sold as well. The experience of the mass protests against the genocide in Gaza provides a critical lesson. Despite the scale of those demonstrations, involving tens of millions throughout the world, they failed to halt the slaughter because they were politically subordinated to the parties of the ruling class, including the Democratic Party in the United States. In the fight against Trump and fascism, any subordination to the Democratic Party is absolutely fatal. As the SEP statement distributed en masse at the rally explains, Trump's regime is not an aberration, but the product of a diseased social order. It is a government of, by, and for the oligarchy. Trump, we wrote, quote, has been chosen to deal with an escalating series of economic, social, and geopolitical crises for which no conventional, legal, constitutional, and non-violent solutions are at hand, end quote. The outcome of the present crisis depends on whether the working class, the only truly revolutionary social force, enters the political situation independently, consciously, and with its own programme. Millions took to the streets, and many workers participated, but the working class has not yet intervened independently through the methods of class struggle. The SCP fights for the formation of rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school, and neighbourhood. These committees must take up the defence not only of workers' economic and social interests, but also of their most basic democratic rights, against the police state measures being implemented by the Trump government. They must coordinate nationally and internationally through the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, IWA-RFC, to unite the struggles of workers across all industries and borders. The entry of the working class into political struggle on its own independent basis will transform the entire situation. It will provide a revolutionary pole of attraction for the millions who are opposed to dictatorship and war, but lack a clear political alternative. The Socialist Equality Party is fighting to arm the growing movement of workers and youth with a clear understanding of the historical, political, and class forces at work. The fight against dictatorship in the United States is inseparable from the fight of workers all over the world against imperialist war, social inequality, and capitalist exploitation. The path forward lies in uniting the international working class in a common struggle for socialism. Israel massacres 45 Palestinians in a single day, exposing fraud of peace deal. By Andre Damon. Israeli troops massacred 45 Palestinians in Gaza on Sunday and further restricted aid shipments. In the deadliest day since the announcement of a peace agreement 10 days ago. Since the announcement of the ceasefire agreement, 97 Palestinians have been killed in 80 separate violations of the terms of agreement by Israeli forces. In addition, 230 people have been injured in these attacks. The ongoing Israeli massacres and deliberate restriction of food make it clear that the peace agreement was nothing but a cover for the ongoing genocide. Governments in the Middle East and in Europe and all major media publications hailed the agreement as a breakthrough and a major step toward peace. It is no such thing. It merely cements and makes permanent the Israeli occupation of Gaza and gives diplomatic cover for daily massacres and deliberate mass starvation by Israel. While the ceasefire agreement led to the release of all remaining hostages held by Hamas, it made permanent the Israeli occupation of over 50% of the enclave. This has created the conditions for Israel to continue to massacre and starve the population of Gaza with impunity, the only change being that this takes place with a fig leaf of diplomacy. The Israeli military confirmed that it had carried out dozens of attacks throughout Gaza on Sunday. The Israel Defense Forces, IDF, added that it had, quote, struck and dismantled 6 kilometers of underground terrorist infrastructure using over 120 munitions, end quote. On Saturday, Israel said the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt would remain closed, despite expectations that it would reopen. Israel has been allowing half as much food into Gaza as it had promised under the agreement. On Sunday, the IDF declared that the delivery of all food into Gaza would be halted before reversing course. Israeli officials publicly claimed that the attacks on Gaza were a response to attacks on Israeli troops by Hamas that killed 2 Israeli soldiers. But reporter Ryan Grimm of Dropsite News said he was told by a US source that Israeli troops were carrying out demolition operations in the city of Rafah when they were killed by an unexploded bomb. Grimm reported, quote, "Soon after the explosion in Rafah, I'm told by a source familiar, the White House and Pentagon knew that the incident was caused by an Israeli settler bulldozer running over unexploded ordnance. contradicting Netanyahu's claim that Hamas had popped up from the tunnels, end quote. President Trump declared that despite the Israeli massacres, the ceasefire was still in effect. Trump declared, quote, "We want to make sure that it's going to be very peaceful with Hamas. It's going to be handled toughly," end quote. For Trump, a ceasefire and the continuing massacre of Palestinians is not a contradiction in terms. Hamas responded to the Israeli massacres by stating its intention to abide by the ceasefire, declaring, quote, "We affirm our full commitment to implementing everything that was agreed, foremost among which is a ceasefire in all areas of the Gaza Strip," end quote. The Israeli government, meanwhile, is openly agitating for an expansion of the genocide. National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir called on Israel to attack Gaza at full force, while Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich demanded war. The death toll in the two-year Gaza genocide stands at over 65,000, with more than 10% of the population either killed or wounded. The real death toll has been estimated to be substantially higher. In August, the UN-backed Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, IPC, officially declared a famine in Gaza City, stating that, quote, "This famine is entirely man-made," end quote. The report added that, quote, "After 22 months of relentless conflict, over 500,000 people in the Gaza Strip are facing catastrophic conditions characterized by starvation, destitution, and death," end quote. Despite promising to increase the flow of food into Gaza, Israel continues to deliberately impose hunger. Quote, "We note that the quantities that entered remain very limited, representing only a drop in the ocean of urgent needs, and they do not meet even the minimum humanitarian and livelihood requirements of more than 2.4 million people in the Gaza Strip," Gaza's government media office said. In a statement, UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram called on Israel to, quote, "open all of the border crossings now, and they have to let all the aid into Gaza Strip at scale alongside commercial goods," end quote. She added that, quote, "There are 28,000 children who were diagnosed with malnutrition in July and August alone, and thousands more since then. So we need to make sure it's not just food coming in, but malnutrition treatments as well," end quote. At least 463 people, including 157 children, have died of starvation or malnutrition in Gaza, and nearly one in four children is suffering from acute malnutrition. The vast majority of Gaza has been destroyed by the Israeli military, with 90% of homes either damaged or destroyed. The enclave's medical, sanitation, and food distribution infrastructure has been largely destroyed. Letter from Christchurch building collapse victims in New Zealand to the families of the Tennessee Explosives Plant Disaster by Maan Alkazi. The World Socialist website is publishing a letter from Maan Alkazi, whose wife, Dr. Maysoon Abbas, died in the Christchurch, New Zealand earthquake on February 22, 2011, to the families of the 16 workers killed in the explosion at Accurate Energetic Systems Factory in Tennessee. Dr. Abbas was one of 115 people who were killed in the collapse of the CTV building in Christchurch. A 2012 Royal Commission of Inquiry found that the six-story building was cheaply constructed in 1986 with major structural defects and was not compliant with the building code. Alan Ray Consultants, the building's designer, did not provide adequate supervision to the structural engineer working on the project, David Harding. The building had hundreds of design flaws. Ray failed to rectify the building's deficiencies during the 1986 consent process and again following a 1991 council inspection. Similarly, warnings about safety hazards at the AES factory in Tennessee were ignored. To this day, however, No one has been held accountable for actions that led to one of the deadliest disasters in New Zealand's history. Those responsible include successive Labour Party and National Party governments, which deregulated the construction industry, paving the way for the disaster. For nearly 15 years, the state has shielded Ray from prosecution. Police prepared to bring manslaughter charges against Ray and Harding, but despite overwhelming evidence supporting such charges, the case was dropped in late 2017 after the intervention of the then Deputy Solicitor General, Brendan Horsley. The letter. My name is Maan Alkaisi. I am the spokesperson for the families who lost loved ones during the collapse of the CTV building in an earthquake that occurred back in February 2011 in Christchurch, New Zealand. The tragic collapse that resulted in the loss of 115 people was because of greed and lack of a building safety inspection system. I would like to send you my sincere condolences for the loss of your loved ones due to the devastating Tennessee explosion, and wanted to let you know that you are in our thoughts and minds. It is hard to imagine the impact of such a tragedy on people and their lives, as we all bereave in different ways. We went through different phases, from shock to denial, to wanting to know what has happened, who is responsible, and demanded those responsible be held into account. I would like to share with you what helped us cope and eased our struggle. First, being surrounded by supporting family and friends during such difficult times is very important in the healing process. Fulfilling some of the wishes and work of our loved ones makes it feel that they are still around, contributing and adding values to our lives and community. Forming the victims' families group was very instrumental in supporting each other, forming special friendships, sharing information, and establishing a formal group that speaks on behalf of the families. Not everyone can speak up and articulate the situation, describing victims' hardships and needs. It was important to ask for strong legal and technical teams to help in explaining what happens, who is responsible, and what are the processes in legal terms and, most importantly, the legal rights of victims and their families. Unfortunately, governments usually offer little help and many empty words, and should not be relied on when it comes to information and legal rights. For example, the first thing our government did was to cover up and calm us down by endless investigations and unfulfilled promises. We still have two cases against the culprits going on after 15 years of struggle. We have documented every submission, investigation, report, and meeting related to the incident, and we set up a digital archive with all the records stored for the case to help chase those responsible and hold them into account. Our loved ones cannot speak and defend themselves. We will, and we will fight for justice and accountability until justice for victims is done. My thoughts and sincere condolences to you all who lost loved ones or were injured at the tragic Tennessee explosion that happened on October 10th, 2025. Regards, Maan Alkaisi, spokesperson, CTV Families, Christchurch, New Zealand.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.